take the money downtown to pay for the roads. Suppose you were just in a small city and you applied that position, then the price congestion got to build further roads in the city. Make it more congested. I'm just questioning the logic. I mean, how far you can carry the logic with just road closure? Not using road funds for the purpose.
This is the point, whether revenues from road pricing should be, could be used for things other than roads.
Yes.
And I think Tom also raised the question of movements between urban and rural areas. Which I think brings back the point that I try to make, that it's awfully hard to run the system half tolled and half free. If all the roads were tolled, then the question is not so serious. But with a mixture, it is very difficult.
But it's also obvious that even if all the roads were tolled, the internal subsidy questions would still be there, because rural roads simply, even if you priced them fully, could not generate income enough to sustain those systems. So that that's a serious set of issues. I don't have a solution for it. All I'm saying is that in a political economy, you have to have at least a rational approach to the limits that that set of issues brings to this potential solution. It's almost intractable in some places. I'm originally from Kansas, and by the way, in Kansas, a foreigner is somebody from Texas. So it's all relative. In Kansas, still, the largest struggles are between relatively vibrant urban areas and dying rural areas. And the imbalance of resources there is in part about road resources. And if you take those areas that are most able to pay because they have inherent business and personal and family wealth, and have them pay, the relationship to that wealth out in rural areas is a set of discussions that the political process will demand an answer for.
Let me just give some general answers to this issue of where the funds should go to. Look, in a market economy, okay, it is not the case that all profits should be resent back into the same industry. Take the cigarette industry. It's still making profits today, but the everyone sees that the writing on the wall, and they're not putting the money back in, and rightfully so. Or you take any growing industry like the internet industry. There's no profits there, right? At the beginning, there's no profits at all. So how does an industry which has no revenues, no profits, how do they grow? Well, they have to grow by taking profits from elsewhere in the economy. So it's just simply not the case that every industry should grow based upon its own profits. You need for the money to be reallocated from one industry to another industry. Now, when you come and your government is involved, okay, then there are these issues come of fairness, you know, and things like this. Now, I have a somewhat different position on these subsidies than Tom does. These subsidies, I think, are a political reality, but that doesn't mean we should simply accept them and say, okay, we have to live with them. We should point out that these subsidies, in many cases, are ridiculous. These subsidies are unjust. It's not the case that everybody should have access to subsidies, or that it's right that rural, that urban areas have huge amounts of congestion, okay, don't have enough roads in order to subsidize grand highways in rural areas where people don't need the roads. So these subsidies are not something simply to be accepted, they're something to be questioned. And I think actually turning to user fees will help people to realize, hey, there have been all these subsidies which have been hidden. They've been hidden from us for many years. Now that they've been brought to the light of day, it's time to re-examine them and say whether they're actually justified by any real considerations or whether it's just political power.
I'd like to make a couple comments. My name is Mike Joyce. I represent the Owner Operator Independent Drivers Association. I represent 145,000 long-haul small business truck drivers that contribute, if you look at the Highway Trust Fund, contribute up to 34% every year into that Highway Trust Fund. that's made up of fuel tax. They pay more than automobiles, excise tax, heavy vehicle use tax, tire taxes, etc. Tolling is an issue that concerns them. I think Indiana, I'm going to just make a few comments before I have to move my car because of the parking. So I'm going to make a few comments.
Road pricing.
Number one, I think Indiana, we'll find out in November how Indiana turns out, and I think everybody can agree with that. It's a political hot potato right now. Number two, for you, Congressman Kennedy, and we're supporters of him, does support, and I believe he will agree that tolls are taxes. He supports increasing additional capacity on the highway as long as it goes away, as long as it provides choice. The toll goes away once it's paid for, which we know will never be the case. Provides choice to drivers, including truck drivers, and the option. And again, creates additional capacity. I think Tom Downs started down the right path here today. It was good to hear him talk about a reasoned approach, a crisp look at highway funding. I'm concerned, though, Tom, that the train's already left the station. And the commission that's been set up by the highway bill is something that concerns us. We're not sure it's taken a broad look at all these different options out there, as is evidenced by the presentation by Federal Highways. I think we'd like to see Federal Highways take a broader approach to things. I think that, I represent small business truck drivers that pay a lot in trust fund. The last thing they want me to say is we might look at increasing the fuel tax, but that's something that needs to be laid on the table, and I think it's something that Federal Highways should talk about. And I'm concerned that that train has already left the track, left the station. And we'd like to take a look at that. We'd like to take a look at some other things versus tolling, public-private partnerships, and moving away from something that Eisenhower, I think, deemed as the defense highway, a highway to move somebody from whatever economic background they come from. They can get in a car, hopefully, in Florida, and drive to Washington State if they want to make their life better for themselves. Our truckers try to do the same thing. So just some comments. Look forward to working with all of you, hopefully, in the next couple years. Thanks.
Does anybody want to describe the situation in Germany on trucking?
I'm sorry, the situation on trucking?
In Germany
has just instituted a truck toll system where they're collecting tolls. But instead of focusing on Germany, I think the point is someone who sort of now has a long-term lease on a highway, obviously trucks are an important part of our constituency. And so what we're going to want to do pretty aggressively is make sure that we do things like electronic tolling. We talk about possibly increases in the speed limit. We look at greater weight size limits to the extent that federal law and state law allow. But we're now incentivized because the trucking community has someone who views them as a customer to do what we can to help them be more profitable. And I think that's in the toll road perspective. I think if you look at congestion pricing in particular, I don't want to speak for your members, but I can imagine that those of your members who need to move through an urban area during rush hour wouldn't like to have a quicker route, even though it may cost more, because in some cases, the wait is worth the wait. In other cases, there's actually real money to be made if they can move quicker.
I think in response, DJ, I think that they expect the Congress to look at taking a hard look at how their 24.3 cents is spent in the Highway Trust Fund. They expect Congress, instead of having 10% of funding go toward earmarks and highway projects and beautification projects and enhancement projects of bike paths, and I'm a biker myself, but that money going toward that is, and transit projects that never get off the ground. I can't tell you countless number of congressional earmarks of transit projects that never go anywhere because the need is not there. There's desire on the part of
While I agree with all of that, I think it all makes sense. Again, going back to the presentations earlier, I think the gap is so great, even if you fixed all those problems, you still have significant issues. And I know that there are components of the trucking industry who support gas taxes, others other things. And the only problem, again, with the gas tax is you could raise the gas tax as high as you want. That does not going to help you with urban congestion. Really, the only real solution kind of in our lifetimes of urban congestion is going to be some form of congestion pricing.
Hi, I'm Jerry Brown. very substantial from now. Texas Transportation was about 65 million. But the latter is based on 3.8 million leasing hours times $13 plus the cost of gas. And after the quote, Susan and I were hypothesizing about where this is so much larger than it came from. And I understand Secretary Cooper's road congestion estimates are about 170 million. So it seems that these new estimates are based on the market value, let's say, of the hours that are being wasted. Many of us who are in business know that we're billed out at twice our compensation or whatever. And that affects our market value. But are those people that are sitting in traffic to be charged at market value or that they're on private value? Could you address that, or do you know the best?
Well, I mean, and actually Patrick may do a better job than me. I can certainly get you the data on that. I know one of the factors that we actually looked at, though, was that the Texas data that we have either dates to 2003 or dates to 2001. So there's an adjustment upward that needs to be made just in fuel costs alone.
That's not fuel costs. Fuel costs are...
And time. You're right. And then there's also the time. And Patrick, do you have more insight on that figure? I mean, I can get you the data, but Patrick may have it off the top of his head.
I mentioned Jack Wells, our chief economist, is the one who produced that information. And I'm not an economist myself, but as I mentioned, it really depends. The extra value is really the productivity, the second order benefits. When you reduce congestion, you actually have, for example, businesses have to have less buffer stock, just-in-time manufacturing becomes possible. City A's costs go down so they can do more trade with City B. The whole GNP goes up. I'm not an economist, but that's my understanding of how the extra value is created.
I guess my general question is, this is a big deal. The estimate is 165 million, 275 million.
Sure. I tell you what, if you get me your information afterwards, I'd be happy to take it up aside and get whatever data I can for you.
Just a couple more questions.
Yeah, these discussions of the public acceptability are very enlightening, and I mentioned the possibility of a poster, or what makes an effective poster, and I wanted to make an actual suggestion in case somebody's going to make a poster, put an ad in a magazine, and that's to have a kind of split image. One of a bumper-to-bumper highway scene, and the other of folks lined up waiting in line to buy bread, for example, at a Soviet grocery store. Maybe an image could be taken from the old Robin Williams movie, Moscow on the Hudson, which in fact had such a scene in it. And you have these two images, and you have a slogan, what happens when access to a resource is underpriced?
Another question in the back.
The private sector, I think we have to look at the model. The private sector is going to work on a very logical model, and that's going to be to seek as much use of the facility that they're managing for automobile use. Now that's logical. I'm not arguing with that. What I'm saying is that the model that's going to work best for the community. I think part of the model has to also say we don't just, we need choices in our overall transportation system. And, how is the model going? Let me ask first, is that the way the model will work, where the private operators will logically seek to maximize the number of auto users to the facility we're managing? That's question one. Question two, is that the right model?
It speaks to the confusion of purpose. If the purpose is the privatization of the Indiana toll road to make it more efficient and better maintained, then some of the incentive is about increasing traffic. If the purpose is congestion pricing, the answer is you price to reduce congestion. they're two entirely different purposes with different strategies. So we talk too loosely about pricing purpose.
Just to answer this point, it seems to me that if people under competition had a choice of what price to charge, they would charge to maximize their revenues. But this would not be the same as the price to maximize traffic. In the same way that when you have a theater, you don't charge to pack it as full as possible with people. You charge it to sell the kind of seats in different parts of the theater.
I'll actually comment like briefly on that because the Macquarie owns the Greenway, and I actually live in Leesburg, so I commute to it. I like to think that helped me get this job, but I'm not sure that's the case. But one of the problems we're experiencing is obviously we own a segment of highway, and we don't own this adjoining segments. And so what you find is you get on the Greenway and you whiz along until you hit the publicly owned facility, which then backs up onto ours. And so. But I think from just kind of a market perspective, diverse ownership is not a bad thing, probably pretty helpful, especially if you get diverse private sector ownership, and ideally at some point where we're competing against each other. Ideally in the DC area, you'd have a private owner of GW Parkway, a private owner of 66, a private owner of 395, a private owner of segments of the Beltway, and they'd all be competing against each other to try to encourage best service for customers. But on the performance point, I'm actually not sure that performance is spread along sort of state, local. I think performance is mainly failing at the urban level, that the 15 cities that were mentioned earlier. Financing, again, kind of tends to be universal across the states and counties. Everyone seems to be short of money. But performance seems to be more of a local problem than it is a national problem.
Okay. Well, I think we're last one. Thank you. bought out the Greenway, people are planning to raise tolls tremendously, and the money for the already taxpayer paid Dulles toll road is being used to build Dulles Rail, and those tolls are going to go up, and you basically have a bunch of commuters who are stuck out there paying taxes on facilities, and they don't get any benefit from them. Plus, the legislature, which is comprised mainly of downstate people with, who want to preserve their rural subsidies and not give Northern Virginia the money that it needs for the road. So how do you fix that problem with congestion pricing without leaving the individual commuter paying a huge amount to just to get on roads he's already paid for, basically?
Yeah, I mean, this kind of goes back to, I think, where we started, and it's a very, very helpful question, which is the biggest obstacle to this is public education. Public didn't pay for the Greenway, actually. That was privately paid for. Facility wouldn't exist but for private investors and investing in that facility and looking forward to returns off in the future. Similarly, our gas taxes pay for a fair amount of things, but not everything the public thinks they pay for. And I think at the end of the day, it would be very helpful. Maybe this is another book, Gabriel, is to sort of explain to people where the gas tax is coming from, what you're paying for, and what value you're getting for that, and then what it's not covering. And do you want to have the option? I mean, there was a poll that was done recently on SR-91 out in California, and people were asked, you know, what changes would you like to see? What do you value the most? And they had the choice between lower tolls or maintain a congestion-free initiative, a congestion-free alternative. The congestion-free alternative won overwhelmingly. I mean, that's what they value. Would they like to have a congestion-free alternative at a lower price? Absolutely. But they're not willing, in the case of that facility, to trade off a lower price for being stuck in traffic again. And I think that's sort of a small microcosm of people understanding what they're paying for and what they're getting. I mean, back to the point that was made earlier about kind of clear, crisp thinking, there's not much crisp thinking as far as what we're paying in terms of that tax dollars and what we're getting back for it and what gap is left.
Okay. It's also a perfect example of why it's important to think about what role of government is responsible for what kind of step. The idea that the national government could actually be in the road pricing business is ridiculous on its face. Imagine the Congress trying to set the road price access for the New York metropolitan region. Congress setting that, or the Congress setting the road price access prices for the Washington metropolitan area with Maryland, Virginia, and the district. The Congress doing that.
Okay, the Congress is supposed to come, but other people can come up and ask questions. we're done. The book is Street Smart: Competition Entrepreneurship, The Future of Roads, edited by Gabriel Roth. Please thank our panel.